Dr. Facolus Rule 10.
Now, there are other things that we had to think about bringing. What could we bring up to fill up our time with? What could we bring up by way of enjoyment in pastimes? My sister-in-law had a piano, and we decided to bring the piano up, a full-size piano. I was playing the clarinet. I had a clarinet, so of course I brought that up along with me. We brought up a couple of mahjong sets, and of course several decks of cards. These are the things. Now, it would seem an awful lot of things that we were going to bring up. And in bulk, of course, they were quite bulky, but what I had to do was to find crates in which to pack these things as neatly as possible, as safely as possible, and so that the crates would, the things could be brought up without damage, and furthermore, they would not be pilfered and lost on the way. Now, the quantity that we were brought up, we were told that we could bring up a reasonable amount of material, furniture included, but they never defined what reasonable was. So we said, all right, the more the merrier, and if we can't put these things on the train, then my father-in-law, who is going to the station with us, would bring them home, to take them back. Bicycles, pianos, crates, beds, chickens, two dogs as well. And the team and my group was me as the only man in the group, my wife, our six-month-old baby, my mother-in-law, my sister-in-law, dear old Amma, two pet dogs. Even from that time, we so much loved our dogs, we couldn't leave them behind. Didn't restrict that. We brought those dogs with us in the train. And they came back to Singapore with us too. No, sorry, we took one dog. Oh, no, two dogs for us. Yes. We brought two dogs with us in the train. We brought them back with us to Singapore. So this is how we, when the time came for us to depart, we were all briefed as to where we had to go, at what time, when, and of course this was at Tanjung Pagar at the railway station of an evening, and we got ourselves a lorry with some help, coolies, and we went to the designated areas and discharged our belongings on the platform to be put into the goods van.
Before that, did you have to register yourself and your family members?
Oh yes, of course.
Where was it?
I think this was done at the municipality.
Do you remember which office did you have to go to?
Shinozaki's office.
So the registration was done by the Japanese?
I believe so, yes.
Besides that, did they give you any instructions as to things like, okay, which day you'll be departing, which train will you be taking and all that?
Actually, the settlers, they call them settlers, those going away to Bahau, went in groups, in big groups, occupying the entire train. And the group in the people with which I went formed the second group. I think this is early January or thereabouts of 1944. So we were all meant in a large crowd.
So at the railway station, who was the person who was giving you the instructions?
There were representatives who were there to give instructions, representatives from the community, like the Eurasian community, and there were, of course, there were some Sikh policemen around who were saying that there was law and order and keeping people at stamp. Only the settlers were allowed on the platforms. Friends and relatives were not allowed to see them off. They were just left at the gate.
Any speeches from prominent leaders?
Shinazaki gave a long speech. I can't remember what he had to say, but I do remember that he did say that we were going there to develop the land, to cultivate, to plant, to produce plenty of products, and they're looking to, they're going to depend on us, and they'll be proud of us, and we must work hard, and you know, and so on. And he did say that, he promised us that at least for the first few months we would be provided with ample supplies of the necessities, rice, sugar, we would be supplied with quinine, medicines, we'd be looked after.
What were the feelings among the settlers there on that day of the departure?
Well, there was a feeling of anticipation. You know, they had made up their minds to go, and having made up their minds to go, as I had made up my mind to make a go of it. So I went there. I had a feeling of a determination to see it through. There was no looking back. I don't know how others felt. Feelings must have been mixed. There must have been some fear in the minds of some people, wondering whether they'd ever come back again. There was also relief in the minds of some people, knowing that if they left Singapore, they would not be harassed by the Japanese. And I think it was pretty well universal that we all went there determined to see things out until we were set free by the Allies, until they returned. We were pretty confident that this would happen, and that we would just bide our time there.
On the journey to Bahau, were there any Japanese guards to...
Inside? Don't think there were, you know. There were some policemen, but I don't recall any Japanese guards. I know that it was a scramble for seats in the train. Nothing oddly, once you get on, you race for your seats. If you're lucky, you got a seat. If you weren't, you had to sit on the floor. And of course, I was looking after four women and a baby besides myself. They had to have the seats first before I got mine. And two dogs. And I had to look after the dogs. You know how a train is. You've got the steps up to the train, and you've got the cabins inside, and you have little like a verandas in the front, and that's where the dogs were. So I had to stay all night long with my two dogs there.
So who helped you with all your things?
There were a gang, the young settlers, the young people who were there. They were in charge of loading the goods vans with all the material, all the bags and barangs and things that were piled on the platforms. They were detailed that job.
So they would be the one to take care of all this, even
yes.
on arrival?
On the other side as well.
Throughout the journey to Bahau, were there any incidents on the way?
No. It was a slow, tedious train journey to Gemas. And at Gemas, we had to change tracks. Now, we didn't have to change our train. The train was put in a siding, another engine put, because we had to go to a different course. Now, this railway line, of course, from Singapore goes all the way up to Penang, as you know, to Kuala Lumpur and then to Penang, as you know, right? But the railway line to this town, Pahau, is along the Sakai Express. It goes to Pahang, and it's a different track. And so the at Gemas is a junction. So we had to go on a siding and stay there for a few hours, 2 o'clock in the morning till, I don't know what time. And there was no sleep all night, no. And then we set off again on this new route, and eventually arrived in Bahau, and the little station in Bahau. Now, Bahau is a small one-street town, and the railway station is about a quarter of a mile away from the town itself. Now, the place that we were heading for, our destination, was named Fujigo. This is the settlement. And Fujigo was on a track, not yet a road, a track, from Bahau, leading to a place called Aitam in Pahang. And it was all rubber plantations, the Geddes rubber plantation and the Dunlop rubber plantation. And the place that was allocated to us was about 6 miles away along this track, along this road. Now, when we arrived in Bahau Station, we were greeted, of course, by the members of the first batch, the young workers. They were detailed to help us bring our belongings to the settlement. There was a lorry, and there was plenty of material, and one or two lorries, I can't remember, a few people. And so they went by shifts, you see. We were provided with meals on the train at Gemas. I remember eating egg and some bread and butter. Yes, we were given a meal, a breakfast. And then it came to Bahau, reaching this Bahau station. There were these people helping us to out of the trains, helping us with our belongings, and then putting these crates and everything else on these lorries. Not many, one or two lorries, not more than that, and ships, and then going up. And they were supposed to have gone 6 miles and back again, but I was very surprised that they went, and for long they were back again. Now this was monsoon season. It had been raining. And only part of the road that reached, that led to Fujigo was passable by any form of transport. So what had happened is that the lorries could only go from a distance of about 3 miles, and the rest of it was quagmire. You had to go by foot, and they dumped all the bags, the crates and things at this third milestone or the fourth milestone, I don't know. And then came back and collected us, and we had to go. And we were responsible then to carry our own things all the way back to the camp. And can you imagine how I felt? With all the things I mentioned to you that I had, what was I going to do? Luckily, I was able to get the assistance of one or two chaps, pay them, and but the rest of it, We had to trudge through mud, carrying my wife, carrying a baby, carrying whatever she could carry to the settlement. And it seemed quite endless. Trudge through an slippery mud, deep, ankle-deep mud. It was quite tedious, and my heart really dropped, and I was able to carry what I could on kanda sticks, heavy things, and walk so far. And not being used to carrying heavy things, especially on a kanda stick, shoulders aching. So anyway, we did that trip there and reached the settlement, where with one big thump our hearts sank to see what was waiting for us. There were three longhouses, long attic sheds with just attic walls. There was one for families. There was one for single girls. There was one for bachelors. And right in the middle of it was one huge platform called Bale Bale. And there we were to put our mattresses. Of course, we brought mattresses as well. We brought our mattresses and set up our mosquito nets. I had to... We carried with us our main essentials, our clothing, whatever foodstuffs we could, things that would not be looted, but it was a heavy load. But I had lots of other things left at the third milestone, and which meant that I had to go back and bring another load, back again to bring another load. It was so tiring, and I was in the depths of despair, but of course you persevere, and eventually I was able to bring everything. Now the piano was brought by contract. We got somebody to bring the piano. Probably ever brought a piano, goodness knows, but I tell you, it proved such a boon. Wonderful. Now, we could, of course, what a little space we had in the Bale Bale, we made it as tidy as possible, as clean as possible. But we couldn't avoid things like lice creeping over from the family next door to us. There was no privacy other than your mosquito net, you know. Or if you like, I'll sort of pile up your suitcases on either side to form a little semi-wall all around. There was another little hut on the side which is used as a communal kitchen of each hut, of each one of these big long houses. And then further down there were toilets. Shocking. Toilets were attap sheds, a deep hole with a little bit of wood on which you squatted. And it was quite revolting, smelly and teeming with maggots. And when it rained, it was quite a difficult thing to do your ablutions. It splashed on you. It was terrible. But you know, when you're in a situation like that, you accept it. You learn to accept it. You can't sort of shudder and say you can't take it. You learn to live with it. And this is what we did.
Do you remember how many of you went up in this batch?
This particular batch that I went, but I cannot remember. I think there were 200 or more. Easily.
So when you arrived there, besides the first batch of settlers helping you to move your things, did they give you a kind of reception?
No, there was no formal reception, no. They just say hello, I'm so to introduce themselves. But we did observe that the people who were there were not altogether unhappy. They were not morose. In fact, the first night we were there, the young chaps got together with the guitars and they were singing, making music, very nice. There was that atmosphere. It was like a camp, you know. The people were looking at it rather like an adventure. It was like an adventure to us people who were young then. The older people probably didn't look at it as an adventure, but we did. And all hoping against hope that this adventure would not last too long and that we were just playing for time until we were freed, waiting for the end of the war.